Welcome to the Career Vision Podcast from WGN Radio. I'm Michael Piff, and this is episode one. We are officially kicking things off. We got two great guests to lead off our podcast series here. But before I tell you who they are, just want to say we're happy to be teamed up with Career Vision in Glen Ellen. They help young people and professionals discover their strengths and navigate their career opportunities. And you can learn more at careervision.org. Our first guests are a duo here at WGN Radio, actually a very well-accomplished duo. I think if you combine their years together, you'd have like 30 or 40 years of experience in the radio industry. It's WGN Radio Midday host John Williams and producer Pete Zimmerman.
Hey, thanks for asking us.
So we're going to start every episode of this with our guests giving a shout out to their high schools. John, I know you might have gone to a couple high schools. A
couple colleges, Joliet Junior College in Southern Illinois, Carbondale. But I went to Minooka Community High School in Grundy County.
Awesome. Pete?
De La Salle Meteors. Go De La Salle. The fighting Meteors of 35th.
Do you both remember what you wanted to do in high school?
I wanted to be a writer, and I kind of am in that lane anyway. I knew I wanted to be in performing arts, but not an actor, not a singer, not a dancer, a writer, a talker. That's pretty close. I always thought I'd be a writer because who the hell is a radio talk show host? But I'd say this is kind of what I always wanted to do. You?
In high school, I was a lost youth. But I think at the time I really liked sports, and I was thinking maybe I would be like a coach and a phys ed teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But
Pete, do you remember when you kind of figured out this is what you wanted to do?
I'm still debating.
Yeah, Pete's not sure if he wants to do it now.
I've always loved radio. I loved listening to. I was like one of those kids that had a radio next to his bed. Like I've always turned on my radio when I wanted to hear something. I was just a radio fan, music, talk, whatever. I was obsessed with it. But like I never thought of doing something like this as a career. Like my parents didn't think of it as something. So they're like, you should be like a lawyer or a dentist or whatever. They didn't think about radio. So I didn't think about radio. And like my high school really didn't have like a radio program or anything. So like I went to college and I was studying like communications is basic. And how I got into the business was I heard a radio host saying that they need interns. And I called up and asked to be an intern. And I never left radio.
Where was that?
Yeah.
Steve Dahl.
Oh, wow.
So I was listening to him and I'm like, I like radio. I think I might have been working at a record store at the time, just kind of figuring out my life. And I heard him say like, hey, do you want to be an intern? We need him. And I'm like, yeah, I'll do that.
that wasn't paid back then, though, right?
No, I probably worked for I worked for a few months just for free, and I wasn't even official internship. I never filled out paperwork. I think I was just kind of there hanging out. It was weird, and I showed up one day. They said, here's a badge, and I haven't left.
John, do you remember what that moment was like when you, or like kind of where you were when you realized this is what I wanted to do?
What a baptism of fire, starting with Steve Dahl. That would have been worse. Steve Dahl. I went to Joliet Junior College for a couple of years and thought, I want to be maybe in broadcasting. I went to Southern Illinois, Carbondale, and the entree for me was kind of like Pete's. I got an internship at WGN Radio between my junior and senior year of college, and it was very, very competitive then, and it was a big program. There was somebody in charge of internships, and they said they got hundreds of applications, and I was lucky enough to get an internship here. And I remember when I got them the letter from them saying congratulations. And I ran to my girlfriend's, who later became my wife, dorm. And I said, look. And then I called my parents. And, we just couldn't believe our good fortune. And then watching the inner workings of a station like this, I just thought it was so exciting and so spontaneous, so live, you know. I mean, watching Wally Phillips sit there, the legendary Wally Phillips and Bob Collins, Roy Leonard and Bill Berg were the daytime hosts, and watching them sit in a chair and talk and have people hovering around them, you know, coordinating the show as it happened. I just thought, what a dream. And I used to listen to the radio a little bit like Pete as a kid and thought it was really fun. But like anybody, how do you get to do that? But now I was watching it happen. So I was pretty much hooked then.
What were some skills you had back then that maybe you've developed over time or some things you've had to learn along the way?
That's a good question. I don't know, what do you say about that?
I don't know. Yeah, I
were you always this organized?
Yeah, that's a good.
Yeah, I was pretty
and resourceful.
I was always pretty organized. Like my parents were German, and they, you know, they're just kind of hardcore, like clean house, clean this, you know, schedules. Like I'm very schedule oriented, and I think that just comes from my parents.
What about your recall? You remember dates, names, places, people. I mean, I'm terrible at it, but I mean, you are. That's why I'm so lucky to have him as my producer, because Pete knows stuff and remembers stuff. I know some stuff, but then I forgot that I knew it. Pete has great recall.
It's getting worse as we all age. I used to be great at it, It's kind of a talent that's like made for radio in that, like, I remember certain TV episodes. When else is that going to be useful in life?
That happens, you know, all the time. We'll be talking about something, and then Pete will say to me sometimes in my ear, there's a Seinfeld episode about that. I know a lot of people have Seinfeld episode recall or whatever, Friends, but Pete goes much deeper than that. And that's one of the great things about our show, I think, is that it, as we're doing it spontaneous, live, talking, all of a sudden we'll weave in something that is ever so germane. And I didn't know anything about it, but Pete remembers that 9 years ago on this day was the anniversary of where, and Pete's also doing live research and prepares for the show. So he comes in with a lot of, you know, helpful background knowledge should we need it. But a lot of times it's off the cuff, and it makes me sound a lot better than I would otherwise, you know?
Yeah. I think I wasn't really, and John, you may see me differently, but I think I'm more assertive than I ever was. And most people probably wouldn't say that I'm assertive. But I wouldn't talk to anybody. I could go through months without talking to anybody, and I'd be happy. But like one of my first jobs in radio was when I worked for Steve. My first day, I had to go get his Boston Market dinner or lunch or whatever.
Oh, man,
it was.
Boston Market.
And I just went to the Boston Market and I picked up his lunch, walked back. You know, I was the intern. I got food, and the order was wrong. And they're like, oh, you do not want to get the order wrong. So, like, I had to go back and complain to the person at the, behind the counter that the order was wrong. And now it's like I am when something if I have to do something, I am like so focused on getting this thing right that I like just like I'll ask questions. I won't take no for an answer the first time. And like, I don't know, it's like things that like I won't give me three times and then I'll put it aside, but I'm not gonna stop bothering you after the first time.
John, you talk to thousands of people every day. You kind of have this really cool intimate relationship with your listeners. But again, it is thousands and thousands of people. How did you get used to doing that?
Well, it's always almost an empty studio. I sit in a studio by myself. Dave Ennett's here for the first 45 minutes of the show. He's the only face I see in person in this space. Pete's on the other side of glass. Other members of the team that you hear are in other studios. So the idea that there's a lot of people listening is not nearly as intimidating as maybe walking onto the stage when we interview Thomas Jefferson and holy crap, there's 1,000 people. And then you care about how you look, sound, and feel. You feel it more. I do remember when I started, and it's like anything, Mike. You know, you do it long enough, you do get used to it. I remember when I was studying broadcasting in college and I didn't get a chance to sit in front of a live mic, even a even a production mic until the junior year, second semester in college. So I had zero experience. And then when I would get a turn down at Carbondale, I would the coolest thing I thought my colleagues did who were students, where they could hold the piece of paper and read the weather or the sports scores or the news in their hand. I couldn't because it would rattle when I held it. I was that intimidated by and nervous about the whole thing. And think about that. And then, you know, you've got one more year, your senior year, and then you're going to try and make a living doing this. You can't even stop vibrating. but that was my experience. And then in time, you know, I got a job in Plano, and I was only live for a few minutes a day. They had me doing production work and other stuff that wasn't – I didn't host a show. And in time, you just got more comfortable with it. And that's never really bothered me. Sometimes if a specific person is listening, you know, if my dad is listening, or if I know somebody out there per se for some specific reason is listening to me talk that day, I might feel it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But you don't have the luxury of worrying about that. You know, you've got 4 hours to fill. Go.
When that happens, do you feel like you're talking to them directly sometimes?
You should be. Well, yeah. I don't know. We had some terrible managers and mostly really good managers here. But one thing that one of them said, who was actually pretty lousy but gave a good piece of advice, I thought, was don't say, hey, everybody. Don't say you all. Imagine that you're talking to one single solitary person and eliminate the plurals as much as you can so that – you aren't going to – how do you do that? But you should just imagine that you're talking to one person and everybody else is listening and they're all assuming that you're talking to them too. I think that's how you make it as interpersonal as possible. Most of the time on the air, we're talking to my colleagues around the booth here. But if I'm talking to a caller or if I'm monologuing, I tend to monologue more than I ever have in my career. I'm imagining I'm just talking to one person.
So you guys have been here for quite a long time, but teamed up together a couple years now. What was that like when you started your working relationship together?
At the time, I had a young woman named Elif Garris who moved on to California. She wanted to pursue her singing career, and she had family out there. So I was sorry to see her go, but it was probably... Elif would agree with this. It was time for her to go. She'd done a lot of good work for us here, but I think she had kind of reached a fork in the road, and I didn't blame her for leaving. I knew Pete had, though, produced an evening show with Justin, and that was a really good show, but I saw how intensely they were working. They kind of like maybe it looks like when Pete and I are in there now, but I mean, it's just a lot of work to put together the show we want to do. You could do less, but that's not what we want to do. And I always thought Pete was, I didn't know what his voice sounded like. Because Pete doesn't talk much casually in the halls, and he doesn't even talk casually that much in the office. But I could always tell he was working really, really hard and had really good content. So I was I had some trepidation about what our relationship would be like because I didn't know Pete that well. But I knew I was going to get a really resourceful, hard worker. And you could do a lot worse than having that skill set. That was my introduction to you.
I was nervous. You know, any time that you work with a new person, you know, you're always just a little bit nervous about how the relationship was going to go. I needed a change from where I was, and thankfully Mary, our boss, put me with John. And it kind of like just kind of reinvigorated my love.
And you were working with Anna at the time.
I was.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. Pardon me. I saw you work with Justin Kaufman all the time, but then you were also working with Anna. I'm sorry, keep going ahead.
And just, I don't know, like maybe it was COVID or I don't know. Like I was just kind of bogged down with how radio was. And I don't know, like just like, yeah, I was nervous working with John. You know, obviously he's a legend here at WGN. And I had never worked with him, saw him working late, you know, a lot of times as well. I was nervous, but excited for the change. I needed a change. I wanted to still be in radio, but I was really looking forward to working with John. And it's reinvigorated my love for radio.
I would say that's true about me too. I wanted to say something else too, and maybe this is applicable to people who aren't Pete and I or aren't broadcasters, but one skill that I've tried to hone over the years is speak more succinctly, not like I'm doing now.
Less is more, right?
Yes. I mean, like, so when we are, I try and segue from a story to another story with not too much patter in between. I try and make my point and then move on. I try not to pick fights or win conversations or win arguments. There's a lot of things to argue about on the radio today, and I try and present information, state what I'm going to say about it. I think our audience is pretty smart. They can process what I said. They can agree or disagree. If they call in and disagree or text in and disagree, I don't try and take every text or call and win them over. I hear them out. You know, one of the things Pete will hear me say sometimes is, we got a really big bus here and we got room for a lot of people. And so I'm trying to cast, I think I've said it more than once today, you know, as wide a net as we can. But I do think that the business of saying what you got to say and then moving on to what else is going on is an important skill, at least in what we do, but maybe in a lot of professions.
Just a couple more from me here, but what is the day-to-day like before the show, preparing for your show? I know you guys kind of start even the day before or days before, but what is that? What does that look like when you're coming up with that rundown and everything that goes into a show?
We don't talk a lot before the show, but we talk enough.
Yeah.
There are some things that are earmarked for each day. You know, so Don Jackson Blattner, our favorite nutritionist, is going to come on Thursday at 11:30. Is that when she comes on, Pete? See what I mean?
It's a great segment, though. Yeah.
It is. She's a delightful talent. So we have some people that are regulars. But I would say if we do 8 half-hours a day, well, let's say 6, excluding the Wintrust business lunch. If we do 6 half-hours a day, and that's the way I think of the show, 4 of them are not pigeonholed, right? We've got to come up with 4 half-hours of unique content every day. The first half hour, I always know I'm going to riff a little bit, and hopefully it's topical and timely. You're asking about how we assemble the show. It's what's in the news. It's why we're sitting there reading and talking to, you know, and working every day, is to try and stay atop of everything that's happened. I will say one other thing, Pete, and then I'll let you answer that question. But I think the one thing I try and keep in mind while we're assembling the show is, if we're talking about the migrant population in Chicago for 20, 30, 40 minutes, then I want to talk about Timothée Chalamet and what he did on Saturday Night Live. I'm looking for a balance. And I think you feel that too.
Yeah, sure. When we're together in the morning, we don't really talk a lot. And one reason for me is that I trust John that he knows most everything. I don't have to say, like, oh, my God, did you see the news? I mean, unfortunately, like, in this business, you know, John, is, like, you're kind of always on. It's like a 24-hour job. Yeah. So, like, I go home, I'm watching the news, I'm paying attention to social media, I'm, like, knowing the stories that might be talked about tomorrow. If I see something that might be fun and relatable to the audience, I'm always sending a note to myself. You're just kind of always working.
Yeah.
And when I'm there in the morning, I know John knows all that. He kind of knows all this stuff, and I, you know, he does his work, he gets his jokes, I don't want to bother him, I don't, like, that's there. But I have an idea of, like, the fun things in the back of my mind that I think would be relatable to the audience, you know, doing laundry and, you know, stuff, fun things like that. Because I already know that we're going to be talking about immigration and Senate confirmation hearing, whatever, you know, the big things. But the fact that I trust John to kind of know what's going on when I've been other places where that may not have been the case.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no reason for a lot of idle chit chat. And I could be friendly, admittedly.
You pay more attention to the news than I do. I don't watch TV news when I go home, but I would. But one interesting thing I think helps is that I, when I sit down, I've got 4 hours of a show in my head, mm-hmm. and the guy sitting 4 feet away from me has 4 hours of a show that anybody could do were he to hand it to them. And so then we do kind of get to cherry pick. Not infrequently in the 11 o'clock news and sometimes in another news break, people come in and just having felt what the first 30, 40 minutes of the show, the first hour of the show, 2 hours of the show is, whenever it is, he then displays for me either relevant things or good transitions. Mm-hmm. You know, so Pete's doing a show over there and he brings his show into me. And if he gives me 4 ideas, I might pick 1, 2, 4, none, but it's so good to have that because what I had over here, I don't love it as much as that. So we really, I think, have two barrels going at the same time.
Yeah. So last one for me. And so the person who's listening to this is either someone in high school who's trying to plan ahead what they're going to do with the rest of their lives, or it's someone that is looking to make a change. What advice do you have for that person that is interested in your industry and, you know,
in our industry,
in your industry and what you do?
What do you say?
I think the most important thing, and for me, was getting my foot in the door. If you're confident in yourself that you know you could do work and you know you show up on time, just do the little things. Get your foot in the door, and you could make a lot of things happen. I think just like, and as we were talking about earlier, I worked for a few months for free for nothing, but in the hopes that, like, hey, we like you, we'll start paying you a little bit. And that's, you know, like, then all of a sudden I'm working overnights doing board hopping, and then the next thing I'm doing, you know, so it just kind of once you get your foot in the door and you're confident in your abilities, I think you can go far.
How long did you work for Steve Dahl?
13 years or so. Wow.
We buried the lead, didn't we?
We did.
That's one of the legendary shows. It was one of the most chaotic shows. It was one of the most dynamic personalities and dysfunctional personalities this town's ever produced. And you were there.
Mm-hmm. We're going to remember that for the docuseries that was going on Steve Dahl.
That's how I first met our boss, Mary. She also was...
Yeah, we got some veterans here. In fact, that's the other nice thing about WGN Radio right now. It's populated by people who are radio people, you know, who didn't transition in here, although plenty of people have, and and they were great. But, you know, John Records Landecker was an overnight disc jockey. Bob Surratt is one of the most famous radio DJs in town and hosts. Pete, Mary, I, Steve Bertrand, our newsman, you know, have careers in radio. The advice I would give people would be, if you were contemplating our industry, but maybe any, is be as multidimensional as you can. Things are changing so quickly. You know, it used to be, okay, if you want to be in broadcasting, also know how to blog. Like, oh, no, that is not enough now. You know, be able to do TV. You know, really? You'd better figure out, can you podcast? Can you produce? Can you edit? Can you do video? And whatever else is the next technical challenge that you'll need. You know, you need to do that. And the advice I have for high school kids when I go to talk to them is read outside your comfort zone. If you read the front page of the newspaper online in print every day and just read the first paragraph of those 4 stories, you'll be better equipped than most people. Most people aren't reading the paper every day, and they're cherry-picking their stuff. If you read the first story on the front page, the first paragraph all the stories on the front page of the paper today, some of it you wouldn't understand, but tomorrow you'd know a little bit more about that. And the next day you go, oh, I heard about this Chinese company that's got a new chip or a new AI, and it's much less expensive and just as good as the ones in America. Huh. And now you're just a more interesting person. And now maybe you're more valuable to somebody because of that, because you're a broadcaster or you're a banker or whatever you want to be. Read the paper. You don't have to read it all, but read that first paragraph so you at least know. I don't know the answers to the questions, but I know the questions because I've just done some summary reading, you know?
Well, I just want to say the 4 years I've worked here, both of you have been to the coolest and my, two of my favorite people I've worked with here. You're both extremely open to the ideas I have. I learn from you. We get to collaborate on a lot, and I really appreciate you both for that. And I appreciate you guys doing this. So thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. We're flattered to be your first one of these, right, in this series?
Yeah, very first.
Yeah. You got to interview Pete again about his career in this business.
Definitely.
He's got stories.
That's like a 10-episode season right there.
You might be onto something.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And that's episode one of the Career Vision Podcast. It's in the books. Thank you to John and Pete for graciously kicking this thing off with us. Also, thank you to Career Vision for sponsoring this podcast. You can discover your strengths with Career Vision by going to careervision.org. I highly recommend checking out those aptitude tests or the career survey that they have there. And for Career Vision, I'm Michael Piff. I'll catch you next time.